You know, one of the consequences of the war in Iraq may be this nation's quest to be energy independent. Did you know that it will make it the world's largest energy producer, the United States, the world's largest energy producer, if trends continue in about a decade? The pace of oil and gas drilling in the last 5 years has quite literally set parts of the American West on fire with gas flames and smoking oil vents. The rocks of the ages and the shale below the surface are being drilled and blown into submission. And the people of the northern prairie along with it.
If we decide to drill for oil, and if the well begins to produce, I'll give your church a $5,000 signing.
$10,000.
Do you want to find someone else that's going to come up here and drill, Eli, make the investment, and do all the hard work that goes into it?
The current oil and gas boom in North Dakota and other parts of the West is not the wooden tower, steam-drilled pickaxe operation of the last century portrayed in the film There Will Be Blood. Is instead a high-tech bludgeoning of the subsurface rock with machines and high-pressure water, the process called fracking. It's already changed the Wild West landscape for good, and the changes may be just beginning. Richard Manning is a writer based in Montana. His article, Bakken, Business, The Price of North Dakota's Fracking Boom, appears in the March issue of Harper's Magazine. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Bakken refers to a town and also a structure, a kind of a geological structure.
Yeah, it actually began with a farm. It's the name of a farmer where that structure was discovered, the Bakken family. But the structure itself is just a huge layer of shale that underlies about a third of North Dakota, a chunk of Montana, a chunk of Alberta and Saskatchewan.
And how are the current wildcatters oil boom drillers, call them what you will, getting oil and gas from this rock?
That probably suggests that the way they're getting it suggests we probably shouldn't call them wildcatters at all because it's so predictable. Because of the shale itself is so uniform that there's about a 98% chance of a success of a well wherever they happen to drill it. But they're getting it by fracking, and they're drilling down about a mile, or actually about 2 miles straight down. And then they have this wonderful technology that throws a bend in the pipe, about a 90-degree angle, and they drill about 2 miles sideways, horizontally, into a layer of shale that contains oil. That's then fracked with water, and the resulting cracks produce the oil.
And they can deal with the cracks, put sort of seals in them and channels in the cracks to amplify the amount of oil and gas coming through these fracked cracks, yes?
Yeah, that was kind of the secret of the Bakken, in a way, is they progressively frack it. So they send a little rubber ball, essentially a rubber ball, down the pipe, expand it so it blocks the pipe, pressurize it to frack it, and then move that ball another 100 yards or so down the pipe to do it in stages. At the same time, they pump sand and a mixture of a bunch of chemicals into those cracks that they call a proppant, which actually props the cracks open and causes them to weep oil for a long time.
And how much oil and gas is under North Dakota compared with what we would know to be proven reserves in California and Texas?
That's the interesting question about that, and there's some disagreement, but not a lot now. How much is down there is about four times the proven reserves of the entire United States. So it's just a phenomenal quantity of oil. But the variable in there is how much is recoverable of that, and the estimates range from 5 to 10%, depending on who you're talking to.
Richard Manning is with us, a writer based in Montana. His article, Bakken Business, The Price of North Dakota's Fracking Boom, is in the March issue of Harper's Magazine. Richard, what do I see in North Dakota these days if I fly over the state or if I walk amongst the towns of this boom?
Well, flying over depends on the time of day you do it. But if you're doing it at night, you see a whole lot of light that didn't exist before. The light pattern of that area of the prairie now looks very much like Minneapolis, like a major city. And what's going on there is they're flaring off natural gas. The natural gas isn't worth enough money to build the infrastructure to pipe it away and use it. And so they flare off about enough natural gas to heat 500,000 homes, just simply burn it at night.
What's the environmental consequence of that, both in terms of the air, the sense of the towns? I mean, this was a land that was untouched for thousands of years until America settled there. And what about the groundwater?
Yeah, the groundwater is the first thing we think about in fracking. And, of course, there are consequences to the groundwater, especially when there are floods, for instance. We're talking about ultimately 30,000 wells. Right now there are about 8,000 wells there. So that's a huge problem, and it's the one we pay attention to the most. But oddly enough, when you're on the ground in North Dakota and you talk to people, they talk about the traffic. And they talk about trucks and they talk about dust. These are very dusty country roads where these wells are being built. And each one of those 30,000 wells requires about 1,200 truck trips during its first year. So you do the math on that, and you have literally millions of truck trips down gravel roads.
And most of these trucks carrying water for the fracking process. It's trucked in and piped down below to break the rock, as Richard Manning was talking about. His article, Bakken Business, The Price of North Dakota's Fracking Boom, is in Harper's Magazine. Joining us now, Lisa Marganelli, a contributing writer at Pacific Standard. Lisa, we've talked to you many times before about the oil business. What is the challenge of creating regulations to preserve the local economies and the sense of tradition in a place like North Dakota?
Well, I think what's happening in North Dakota and actually all around the country with the fracking boom is that you have oil coming to places that don't have a history of it. You know, Texas has 100 years of oil or more, and they have a whole set of regulations and taxes that have been worked out. What you don't find that in places like North Dakota. North Dakota's taxing the oil at around 10%, and then only 10% of that is going back to the local communities. That is, so each well brings in about $15 million to the oil company, and then they pay out about $1.5 million to the state in taxes, and then just one-tenth of that comes back to the local communities, and that's obviously not enough to deal with, millions of truck trips and the sort of battering of the local communities. At the same time, the regulation is very patchy. Texas has had for, I think, 40 years at least, a regulation that you can't flare gas at the wellheads. You absolutely have to put it in a pipeline. They don't have that in North Dakota. So you have all this waste. You have all sorts of gases going into the air and affecting people's breathing. The other thing is that this is a relatively short-lived boom. The life of a well is very short. Its maximum output is actually the second month of production, and it falls by 45% in the second year. And then it'll continue for 30 years, but at really diminished rates. So what you're really going to have is a huge kind of cleanup program down the road. Now, states like Wyoming have a big fund where they take some of the taxes and they stick them in the fund. They have $5 billion in their fund for eventual cleanup. I think in 2011, North Dakota put $67 million in its fund. Wow. So we're really looking at kind of a big thing down the line. The other thing
Hold on one second, Lisa. Let's get a comment from Richard. Lisa Marganelli is the author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank. Richard Manning, is North Dakota's sort of landscape coming to a town near, rural Pennsylvania or upstate New York or any of the other places where you can use this fracking technique to get oil and gas out of the ground?
That's hard to say, but I think it's largely dependent on how much natural gas is involved and the price of natural gas. What's unique about or interesting about North Dakota is that it's mostly an oil play. And so because of the high price of oil, it's boomed a lot faster than some of the other shale deposits. That said, there are shale deposits like it all over the country, about a dozen of them that look like they could play out the same way.
So, Lisa, one of the things I learned in Richard Manning's article is that the U.S. will be the largest producer of oil if current trends continue in about a decade. What does that mean?
Well, the first thing it means is that we will be the largest producer of oil if the price stays over $60 a barrel. So what that means for consumers is that this boom only lasts as long as we continue to have high oil prices. So it doesn't actually do us as consumers particularly much good. Last year, Americans spent $479 billion on gasoline, which is about twice what we spent 10 years ago. I mean, it's an enormous amount of money. It's a big hit on the economy. But this boom doesn't actually give us more oil. In fact, all the extra oil that the Bakken put in to the sort of world oil market last year got absorbed almost perfectly by China's drivers. Wow. About 800,000 barrels a day.
Lisa Marganelli, contributing writer at Pacific Standard and author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long Strange Trip to Your Tank. Richard Manning's article, Bakken Business, The Price of North Dakota's Fracking Boom, appears in the March issue of Harper's Magazine. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.